Leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. In the grim months before the outbreak of the Second World War, the nation has begun to call for a new vital leader. On many lips, the name Winston Churchill. So our great adventurer, fighter and statesman, waits in the background, ready to answer the call to national service. Deputations of members of Parliament and of organizations see the Prime Minister, Mr. Chamberlain.
Mr. Chamberlain, this deputation is of the opinion that the best talents of statesmanship are not being utilized at a time when every man is needed for the task to which he is best fitted. It is no disparagement of His Majesty's ministers, individually or collectively, to say of them that they do not exhaust the list of those counselors who are best qualified to decide upon fateful issues and to plan strategic strokes.
Perhaps you'll be good enough to tell me, Lord Camrose, just who it is who possesses these qualities and is yet outside the cabinet.
One name will leap at once to everyone's cognizance. It is that of Mr. Churchill, statesman not only schooled in responsibility by long and intimate contact with affairs of state, but possessing an unrivaled practical knowledge of the crucial problems which war presents, especially in the higher strategy. With vision and energy, he unites a conspicuous gift of exposition and popular appeal. And in this straight pass, the nation cannot prudently dispense with the great services which he is capable of rendering.
Lord Camrose, I am not unaware of the talents of Mr. Winston Churchill, but to place him in the cabinet at this juncture would be to invite a declaration of war by Germany.
Hello, Randolph. Is your mother in?
Coming, dear. You're home very early.
Yes.
Any news, Father?
Yes, news of the worst kind. Just another defeat for the Allies. Another defeat that will lead to war. Germany and Russia have signed a non-aggression pact.
But how can that be possible?
I can't believe it.
I received the news as soon as it came through. It hasn't been generally released yet. We could scarcely believe it ourselves.
I can't believe it. Russia and Germany? Why, they've always been such bitter enemies.
I never really trusted either of them. But I must say, this has given me a great shock.
But what does it mean?
It means, Randolph, that Hitler is going to realize Bismarck's formula of never fighting on two fronts against powerful enemies. The Kaiser forgot that point and paid for his carelessness.
Then it looks like war soon.
At any time now.
Well, there's one consolation anyway. You'll be back in the cabinet.
What makes you so sure of that?
Everyone knows you'll be asked the minute war starts. Isn't it a fact?
Well, I have had some unofficial advice to that effect. But I'd cheerfully reconcile myself to being out in the cold for the rest of my life if it meant that war could be averted.
There'll be no more appeasement, will there?
No. No, it's too late for that now. Russia has done in a few weeks what Neville Chamberlain's been trying to do for years. Now he's got to try my way and stand up to them. If he'd only realized that in the first place, it would have been easy.
I've become very friendly with Mrs. Chamberlain. And I know Mr. Chamberlain is anxious to have you with him. But he's going to wait until the last moment, so that Germany can't accuse him of any provocation.
Perhaps in his own way, he is right. Certainly no man has done more for peace. No man has sacrificed more to avoid war. I knew that war with Germany was inevitable. He refused to believe in that inevitability. Well, he sacrificed much for peace. But I never had, nor have, any doubt that he would sacrifice honor.
Propose to say many words to the House tonight. All know the situation which confronts Europe today. At 5:20 a.m. this morning, the Germans began their attack on Poland. If Poland remained undefended, every country in Europe would fall to the Nazis' sickening technique. The German Chancellor has not hesitated to plunge the world into misery to serve his senseless ambition. We have no quarrel with the German people, except that they allow themselves to be ruled by a Nazi government. His Majesty's government has delivered an ultimatum to the German government. There's little more I can say at present. We must wait for a short time before I have a further announcement to make.
Winston. Yes, Neville?
I would be most grateful if you'll help me now.
At your service, always, Neville.
Thank you. I have great need of your support.
An empire moves majestically from peace to war. His Majesty King George VI delivers his message to the empire. In this grave hour, perhaps the most fateful in our history, I send to every household of my peoples, both at home and overseas, this message, spoken with the same depths of feeling for each one of you, as if I were able to cross your thresholds and speak to you myself. We are at war. Sunday of September the 3rd. The Prime Minister has spoken from number 10 Downing Street, now hurries to the House of Commons to speak. Then Winston Churchill delivers his message.
In this solemn hour, it is consolation to dwell upon our repeated efforts for peace. All of them have been ill-starred, but all of them have been faithful and sincere, because Britain has tried to keep the peace. Her moral conviction can renew her strength. Outside, the storms of war may blow, and the land may be lashed to the fury of its gales. But in our own heart, this Sunday morning, there is peace.
Members of the Commons leave the Houses of Parliament. Outside, they are greeted by a watching and waiting crowd.
There's Doc Cooper. He was right, wasn't he?
Yes, the poor old Chamberlain did all he could.
Hey,
there's Winnie. Winnie Churchill. Oh, where's Mr. Chamberlain? Three cheers for Winnie.
Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!
Thank you, my friend. Be of good heart. Everything will be all right.
Of course it will. Wish we'd had you back there before, Winnie.
That's all right. Now, let's get through, will you, please? It's all right, officer. We'll manage.
Aye, make way for Winnie. Yes, make way, Poncher. Poncher. You're old enough for drinking war.
Back at number 10 Downing Street. What history we've seen here.
Yes. You much more than I, Winston.
It's 1914 all over again. Back at the Admiralty, fighting against Germany.
Winston, my dear fellow, you know why I have sent for you.
Yes, yes, of course.
I've also interviewed Greenwood and Sinclair. Invited their parties to nominate certain of their members for important posts in the war cabinet.
They refused?
Yes, but promised every support. I must therefore assemble a war cabinet without them. Sir John Simon will remain as Chancellor of the Exchequer. Lord Halifax as Foreign Secretary. Mr. Horbelisha, Secretary of State for War. I want you to take your old post as First Lord of the Admiralty, Winston.
Well, I'd like that.
I've asked Mr. Eden to accept the post of Dominion Secretary. We have a great task ahead of us, Winston. It's no time for personal things, but I want you to know that no personal feelings of mine have been responsible for your non-inclusion in the cabinet before.
I quite understand.
Time has proved that you were right and I was wrong. But I sincerely believed that peace was possible in Europe, that all problems could be settled by a man's good word. You have every right to say to me now, I told you so.
Let me say instead that the past is forgotten, Neville. We shall go forward as comrades, and victory will come.
Thank you for everything, Winston. The others will be here in a moment. Listen to the crowd.
Magnificent, wasn't it? The way the members all joined together in the lobbies and sang the anthem. How it stirred your heart.
Everybody united. As seldom before. The ordinary people outside. Young and old.
The common people of England. Listen. They're singing the song of victory, too.